the guy who drives it through.
Hit the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It's just unfortunate we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember it to this day. It was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though. Still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously, being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And it goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park! Twisting! Shouting! Shaking!
Good evening and welcome to the MFC podcast. Sparra isn't here this week. He's currently stranded on a train somewhere. We did try and crack on, but unfortunately the train noises in the background were a wee bit too full on to carry on. So we'll just crack on without him. So we've drafted in Joe McKelvey as a late replacement to take us up to four, joining myself, Busta and Peter Elder. How are we doing, guys?
Very well, thank you.
Very good, thanks.
Well, we'll start with a bit of a down note compared to last week's podcast. I think last week's podcast probably went down in his history as the funniest one yet, kind of buoyed by a fantastic win at Rugby Park, but unfortunately Saturday wasn't quite as good. We'll just start, there's a few talking points, but we'll just start with the performance as a whole. What were your thoughts on the obviously it was a poor defeat, but any positives at all, Buster?
Louis Moult scored. Louis Moult's got a great goal scoring record. I thought as well there was points in the match where the passing and the movement looked really, really good. Unfortunately, they were few and far between, but there's one or two points where we were very much on top, and I thought that even at 3-0, or 3-1, sorry, I thought we could maybe even come back in and sneak some, but it obviously never came about. So positives, very few positives, but there maybe was one or two in there.
Peter, for me, it was a bit of a carbon copy for the performance at Rugby Park. You know, although the results were very, very different, I just thought that there was just kind of a poor performance, quite a mediocre performance. There was one or two players who did reasonably well without being top class. The performance levels weren't quite there. Even, you know, to go so far as to say both games had a late goal from Louis Moult. As I said, the results were really different, but, you know, it just felt as though both games have been pretty poor, and Inverness just happened to punish us where Kilmarnock didn't. Is that a fair reflection?
Yeah, in a lot of ways. I mean, I think Kilmarnock compared with Inverness, they always impress me the last couple of years when I'm going to Fir Park. They work their way into positions very well. They're a very good, crisp passing team with great movement. Guys like Greg Tansey and dare I even say it, our nemesis from Saturday, Mr. Vigers, who scored an absolute worldie. But they seem their movement, and they're at times they're a really, really good team to watch. And obviously Kilmarnock aren't quite at that. We're not quite at that yet, but I think there's shoots of recovery there. We're trying to do the right things, get the passing, get it wide, link up. And there's a bit of link up there, but sometimes I think a final ball, as we've seen particularly in the first half, crosses into the box a couple of times, Lozzie and Lionel. One massively underhit, one massively overhit with a led to a tap in for Louis Moult. But, you know, we're trying to do the right things. Final cross, final shot. I think McGee will know that. We'll need to work on that. And as Buster himself said, at 3-1, we get another goal. And I really honestly think that we could have taken at least a point from the game. Fact is, we didn't. Inverness are a good side, but it's not all doom and gloom. It's not as bad as a 3-1 home defeat to Inverness perhaps sounds.
I mean, Joe, Peter obviously mentioned McGee there. He said when he first came in that it might take him about 15 games to get to grips with the team. Do we start to see any positives at all? Are we making any improvements, or is he still kind of feeling out the team and seeing where we go from here?
I think there has been a couple of marked improvements in the team. On Saturday, I thought Liam Grimshaw had a great game in the middle of the park, and I thought he gave us something we've been missing in a lot of games this season, because for me, Lasley, when he was playing alongside Jake Taylor, was trying to do the work of two men, and he's 36, so that really proved to be a downside. I thought Grimshaw was fantastic on Saturday. He seems to have beginning to get an outline of a formation he wants to play. I thought Ainsworth done well when he got on the ball on Saturday, but we didn't get him on the ball enough. One thing I did find quite bizarre, though, was the first time he seemed to be able to get at the full-back, get past him and put a cross in, it led to a goal. And then immediately after the goal, he switched him flanks. But as Joe Smith pointed out to me at the game when I mentioned that to him, he said that a second after he got switched flank, he almost scored. So I was possibly a touch away from calling it a tactical masterstroke, but I did still find that a bit bizarre.
Obviously, Joe's picked up on one or two players there. Man of the match was obviously Josh Law. He's a player who has come in for a fair bit of stick, both from the stands and on the likes of Steelman Online. I've always thought he's reasonably, he's a steady player. He does a job without being particularly top class. But, I wasn't a Pataudry. By all accounts, he was man of the match there. He was undoubtedly man of the match for me at Rugby Park. Man of the match again on Saturday. I mean, what is it that seems to be going right for him just now? Do you think it's, just he happens to work well with McGee, or is there something more? I mean, what is the secret to Josh Law's kind of meteoric rise at the moment?
Well, he's come from, I mean, what, probably the fifth or sixth tier English football, wasn't it? Fourth or fifth at least anyway. So people might not think it's a big step up, but it probably would have been. He came in when he first started against the Icelandic mob, Stjarnan. He sort of played behind the striker, scored two goals. I think then we thought we were maybe going to get a wee bit of a player in our hands. But he struggled in that midfield role. And eventually, between us all, we were all saying, we think he'd do a job right back. He got there. Last year, we spoke about how he was probably going to be our best player, only based on the fact that, he was one who didn't let his head go down. He was constantly buzzing about trying, whether or not he was the best player technically in the team was obviously always up for questioning, sorry, but I think he seems to, I don't know if it's maybe, as you say, maybe something to do with the way McGee's wanting him to play, or, the way the team's now been set up. Maybe even it's just, McGee's come in and said, everybody's got a chance, here we go, let's see what happens. Despite the fact he was first choice right back under the previous two as well, but I mean, I don't know what it is, but it's pleasing anyway, because on Saturday, as you say, I thought he was fantastic. He seemed to link up really well going forward, and as Peter hinted at it as well, there was one where a moved in the right hand side and he sort of sclaffed an attempt to cross, whereas if he'd even connected a wee tiny bit better, it'd have been across the face of the goal and probably led to a goal. But I like him for his attitude. I know there's a lot of people who got on his back, maybe because they don't think he's got the ability. But I think especially in our game, attitude goes a long way. And if he can put in a decent effort every week, he might not end up the best defender in the league, but I think he'll certainly start with our team. It could lead to decent performances like that every week. So if he can keep it going, I'm all for it.
Aye, totally. We'll pick up on the actual, obviously, as I said earlier, it was a poor performance, a poor defeat, but there's certain talking points that we can pick up on. First, obviously, the penalty award. For the handball. Peter, I mean, what was your take on it? I know that I've noticed in, the forums and on social media, there is that kind of, it's divided fans, some, going with the idea that it wasn't in a natural position, so it's a penalty, others pointing out that it wasn't deliberate handball. What's your thoughts on it?
Well, first of all, if I may just mention, we were blowing smoke up Josh Law's backside. He did a wonderful nutmeg in the first half, and if he's listening, I've got to mention that for him. Because that preceded a great move down the right as well, so he's really becoming the Cafu of Motherwell, kind of. Penalty all day long for me, I've got to say. I know people will argue it wasn't a deliberate handball. There's very, very few handballs that are completely deliberate. And that I look at a handball or any penalty decision, if that was for Motherwell in our favour, I'd be screaming for it. If your hand's up that high, you're giving a referee a decision. He may well have been pushed. I haven't seen the highlights again, to be honest. If he was pushed, that unbalances you. But your hand's that high, the ball comes off it, every referee is going to give it. I wasn't surprised. I wasn't angered by it. For me, it just looked like a clear penalty all day long, unfortunately. But what happened next, I think, was the major controversial point.
Definitely. Although before we go into that, I just want to ask you, Joe, as a sterling centre half for the mighty Law, is that the kind of decision that you would hold your hands up and say, okay, I was in the wrong, or would you be going mental at the referee if he gave that against you?
I would probably by default be going mental at the referee, because that's just kind of what I do. but overall, I'd have to agree with Peter there. I don't think McManus can have any complaints. I mean, you raise your arms that high, if the ball hits your arm, then I don't think there's any complaints to be had. It's a stupid thing to do, and something we should be expecting better of from an experienced player like McManus.
And what about the subsequent penalty then, Joe? Obviously, he steps up. Good save, cleared by Josh Law, pulled back for encroachment. I think at the time, I think maybe my reaction was probably the same as many others, to stand up and shout and boo, because, players encroach at penalties, that's what they do. But having seen it back, he's quite far in, he's pretty much in line with the penalty taker when he takes it. Is it the right decision, or is the consistency or the inconsistency of referees, is that enough to say that, it's a poor decision?
I believe I did see on Twitter someone post a link to an occasion in a Hearts game not long ago where Craig Thompson didn't give encroachment for a pretty much identical incident. For me, I was obviously, as you say, shouting and booing at the time, quite angry because we've saved a penalty and then it's to be retaken. But looking back on the highlights, I can't really decide 100%. But what I will say in our favour is that if you look at Josh Law, he only seems to carry himself into the box because the Inverness player carries into the box. You can even see him sort of glancing at the side as the Inverness player sort of tries to run past him, I think you can see. And for me, if the Inverness player steps into the box first and the penalty gets saved, then surely it's an advantage Motherwell. Because, we've seen it on the flip side. I remember John Sutton against Flamatari.
Correct.
He scored the penalty and their player encroached and we had to take it again. That one with Sutton was particularly confusing for me because I was watching it online and someone knocked my door after he scored the first goal. I went to answer the door, thought we were 1-0 up for half the game and we weren't.
Well, I mean, Buster, obviously, it's a tricky one, I think, because I don't agree with the idea that because players encroach fairly regularly, then he should just be allowed away with it. I mean, an example I would use is goalkeepers who come off the line at penalties. Goalkeepers always come off the line. They jump forward for a bit of momentum and they come, maybe a yard and a half off the line. And although that's not allowed, it's widely accepted. Whereas if a goalkeeper came rushing out about 4 or 5 yards or reach the end of their 6-yard box, people would be screaming for, to be retaken or for the goalkeeper to be booked or something like that. So I don't buy that argument. But does there need to be a wider kind of challenge to referees that, you know, there is inconsistency there, because as Joe says, at the end of the day, if Josh Law goes in there because the Inverness player's going in, you know, Josh Law is in an awkward situation there. He either stands at the end of the box, the Inverness striker goes in, you know, the referee doesn't give encroachment, and the Inverness striker scores, and suddenly Josh Law looks a fool because he never tracked his man. Or he goes in, clears the ball, and the penalty gets retaken. I mean, you know, how do you really get around that? Or do you need to just accept that these decisions are going to go against you at times?
It's a tough one. I think as you sort of in a roundabout way says it, I think Joshua's crime was getting to the ball first, because as Joe mentioned, you know, he seemed to go with the Inverness player, and then when, you know, the ball was deflected out his way for Ripley saving it, he was the one that got to the ball and headed it away. So it does make you wonder, you know, as she says, if the Inverness player had got his head to it, you know, directed it and go, or headed it wide or whatever, you know, what would the thoughts then have been? You know, would there have been a retake? You know, me and Peter were talking before we started recording, just saying, you know, is that a free kick to us, or is it a retake anyway? But, you know, as Joe's just reminded us there, it happened against us with Flamatari. So I tend to thought that maybe it was just going to be a retake, but it's these I don't have any arguments with the penalty, with the decision that it was encroachment. But, you know, I believe Craig Thompson said something, again, Peter pointed out, said something along the lines of, if he'd, you know, some of it, if it went the other way, or the Inverness player got the ball or something, it wasn't going to be a foul. Sorry, Peter, what was that he was saying again? Or Josh Law's point that he was saying?
I think he pointed out that if one of our players goes into the box and coaches, one of their players goes in, that cancels it out. So, you know, because you've got two players in, but Inverness, if you watch, there's been a few, like, photographs on Twitter and whatnot, that when the ball was struck by Tansy, there was three Inverness players in the box and two Motherwell players in the box. Now, if there's a hard and fast rule that if there's more of one team, if more of the attacking team in the box and the penalty is scored, then it would be a retake because they had more players in. Or in that instance, if it was saved, should it automatically write that it's a save, even though there's an encroachment? The attacking team would have gained their advantage by having an extra body in the box. I don't know whether that's Craig Thompson's interpretation or whether that's across the board, and perhaps that's something that it would be good to find out, because it was possibly the most crucial thing, you know, in the game, because it set the tone. I think our heads went down slightly after that, and Inverness get the boost from thinking they'd missed a penalty to then being in front.
I think to be honest with you, that sounds like Craig Thompson's living in his own wee bubble, to be honest with you. I mean, if I'm wrong, fair enough. It's not my job to know the rules. But I'd be surprised if I was wrong, because that sounds like absolute nonsense to me.
Well, I mean, Peter, is this now... I know it's something that kind of crops up every so often. It probably crops up more in English football because it's so massively televised. But, you know, when do we get to the point when referees are, you know, going to come out and at least shed some light in some of the decisions they make?
Well, I really do not know why it hasn't happened before now, because, I mean, they're saying, oh, we can't have referees in front of the cameras and they're protected left, right and centre, and, you know, they could get bombarded by questions by the media. But clubs, you know, are duty bound before a game, you know, the two or three days in the lead up, a presser, and then before the match and after the match, have to put at least a one player up in front of, if it's live telly or radio, written press, whatever. And with the best will in the world, not all these guys are going to be marvellous orators like what we are, obviously. But the point being, you know, you've got these guys that, you know, they could be like, they could have been bottom of their class at school, but they've got to go on the telly and speak live. But referees who obviously, you know, and more often than not hold, you know, fairly, you know, decent, well-paid other jobs as well, you know, like, some of them were like policemen, lawyers, you know, guys who are, you know, fairly high up and have a reasonable amount of intellect, but they can't go on camera and speak. Also, I think the perfect time to have that brought in would have been 5 years ago when there was the strike and they were wanting a wage increase. Right, like, well, you have your wage increase, but you need to be more accessible to the media and, you know, for the fans, accountable. after a match, come out and answer your questions. I think more fans would have more respect for referees rather than them thinking, oh, they're protected, they're being, you know, kept from us, it's them and us, and we're not worthy of explanation. But as I say, when you've got referees already with a fairly good job in most cases, getting £800 a game, some of them will be earning more than, you know, I would say a huge amount of players playing in the SPFL. You know, the players like Hamilton, Ross County, possibly even some of our own players will not be in £800 a week. And these guys, as I say, they have to go in front of me, the referees don't. And I think referees coming out and making a statement or answering questions, and also the thorny issue of television evidence, where a television official would have spotted that incident right away on Saturday with the encroachment, and whatever the rule is, could have ruled on it within seconds. That's what you're your fourth official for that. Give them something to do rather than holding up a board and shouting at a manager for having one foot outside the, you know, the technical area.
Well, I think on the subject of referees coming out and speaking to the media and stuff, I mean, obviously these guys have got, you know, they're literate because they're supposed to write a referee's report. So why not, even if the issue is that they aren't, you know, prepared to stand in front of the media or take questions, you know, why not even just, you know, an article, you know, a report where they have a public report where they actually just detail what went wrong in a game. That seems fairly acceptable. You know, you wouldn't get questions from the media. You could go home, you could write down what went wrong or what you perceived to be, and then by Sunday it's up on the, you know, whatever the Referees Association website or whatever by the Sunday, and anybody who wants to go can go and see it. I mean, that seems as though that would be quite logical.
The only thing I would say about that though is the fact that you're going down to the Doogie gate of about, was it 4 or 5 years ago with Doogie McDonald, where they basically colluded and got their story straight but eventually get found out. You know, managers are sometimes judged and banned for their after-match reactions, you know, but they have to go in front of the media. I think we need to be at the stage where referees have got to say, look, you know, you're not going to have a hounding pack, you know, baying for your blood.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, give a conference. Just, I'll let them ask the questions and you give your honest opinions and what you saw at the time. And if the television pictures whatever prove you otherwise, say, well, I hold my hands up. That's what I seen at the time. That's what I thought. Everybody will respect that. I think it can only help referees, whereas protecting them just makes people think, you know, they've got something to hide here. And I say, even giving them 24 hours gets them a chance to, if you like, get their story straight, as Doogie McDonald obviously tried to do a few years ago.
Well, I think it's also worth pointing out that we're actually talking about this after a game. I think we've all agreed that it was a penalty, and I don't think anybody's, you know, been massively convinced that it wasn't the right decision in terms of the encroachment. So this is a game where the referee very possibly has got the decisions right. It's not as though we're kind of blaming him and sort of saying, no, the referees need to come out and tell us this. I personally think he's got the decisions, or those decisions right. And yet, you know, I still think that it should be done. So, you know, I think it's worth pointing that out, because I think it can be easy for referees themselves, the SFA, the media, etc., to kind of brush aside anybody who says that referees should come out as just, you know, angry football fans who are taken out in a referee. I think they need to realise, you know, at some point that it's not doing anybody any favours. You know, even if it is, you know, it's not doing Josh Law any favours if he's standing on the edge of the box, knowing that he can't just stand there and let the Inverness striker go in, because the referee might be inconsistent with the encroachment law. I mean, it's, you know, it's something that needs to be sorted. But we'll move on. The other decision, I don't want to spend the whole thing talking about decisions, but then we don't have much else to talk about. The McManus red card, Joe, again, as the resident defender, we'll come to you. The first one, what was your take on both bookings, first and foremost?
His first booking, I think, is one that would have been commended 10, 15 years ago and been called a great tackle and be labelled a warrior at a centre-half and compared to Tony Adams, amongst other things. But in today's game, if you come out with your studs shown and just fly into a tackle like that, then you can expect to be booked. I'm not saying I necessarily agree that it is a booking. I think that the game's going soft. That's my own take. But by the letter of the law, you see it given week in, week out. And I'll once again point to the fact that our most experienced players should be better than that. It should be wiser than that. And I'm very disappointed by him once again.
I can't. I must admit, I think you've summed up perfectly for me. I can't really argue that at all. Although, I mean, what was the take on the second thing? I mean, I didn't see much of it at the game, but having watched it back, I'm still not 100% sure exactly what the bookable offence was.
The second one did mystify me a bit. I couldn't at the game kind of decipher what had happened, and then watching it back, I'm still really none the wiser. Unless there's been something that Sportscene's fantastic camera angle didn't manage to pick up, then I couldn't really spot much wrong with it. To be honest, it just looked as if it was two players battling for the ball, and then one went down. But as I say, I didn't get a great view of it at the game. Didn't get a great view of it in the highlights, so there could have been a wee nudge or something that the linesman spotted. I don't know, but very inconclusive for me there. Like I've been highly critical of Sportscene in recent weeks, and you know, you think you used to go to games, and a sort of incident would happen at the game, and you would think to yourself, "Oh, we'll see it in the highlights, and you'd go home and watch the highlights, see it, make up your mind for yourself." And then go back and speak to your mates and say, oh, we were right at the game, we were wrong at the game. The one camera angle nonsense we're getting these days makes it near impossible to analyse some decisions.
Aye, well, that's a good point, Peter. I mean, obviously, as a hospitality guru who mingles with the stars on a regular basis, I mean, was there anything mentioned about the second booking? Because, I mean, I'm kind of with Joe. I'm still a little bit mystified with it.
Well, thanks for that. Thanks for calling me a guru. I'm not sure I'm entirely worthy of that. And mingling with the stars, I think that's very loosely termed as well. God love them.
Well, we were there on Saturday.
Well, you've only really accentuated my own point. I went downstairs a couple of minutes before the end, as I usually tend to do, so as to welcome my guests back. And I only seen it come up on Soccer Saturday, McManus off. I haven't seen it in the telly. I think it was Danny Lopez's reaction to the challenge and doing holding his head. Because Craig Thompson, he gave the foul and then walked over slowly and then pulled the card out. So I think the boys' play acting has made Craig Thompson think that Mick's maybe, you know, hit him with, you know, in the back of the head, hit him with the forearm or something. But obviously because that's a second yellow, you know, we can't appeal it. So, you know, that's the disappointing thing. But nothing else was really said about it. That's just my own take. I just think the boys, you know, I think he's play acting. I think there must have been literally 10 seconds left in the game, and I think in a situation like that, you know, people say, well, referees got to, you know, be the same in the first minute and the last minute, but for a second yellow, just give the free kick, let them play it, go on with the game. Did he need to show a second yellow? Probably not.
And what's your take on Sportscene these days?
To be honest, I very, very rarely watch it. Maybe that's more to do with the fact that we're not winning as many times as we'd like. But I must say, I did watch the what has become infamous episode a week ago on Sunday, and it's actually making the Scott Sport programmes of the Julian and Sarah O era look really professional and slick.
That's a good show. Actually, in tribute to that, I'll try and get the Graham Spears playing piano to play us out tonight as the outro.
Well, I think that would really be quite a tribute, you know, with Kingsley the Partick Thistle mascot dancing in the background as if on an acid trip. That would be perfect.
I mean, Buster, what I mean, surely nowadays when, you know, Scottish football isn't the best it's been. Surely nowadays, particularly because so many people looking to England and comparing our league unfairly with English football, you know, it's a package deal, football nowadays. It's an entertainment package, and it surely includes, you know, the football you see in the TV. And Joe makes a great point. I mean, sports scene nowadays is absolutely terrible, as is things like cup draws. I mean, I remember you used to go to the you know, the game, the cup game on the Saturday, and then rush back to the car so you could hear who you were playing in the next round and stuff like that. I mean, what has happened to all the media coverage of football in Scotland? Because it's absolutely garbage.
True. pardon me, sorry. The only part of the media coverage that I seem to enjoy these days is open all mics, to be honest with you, on the BBC. Again, if I kind of get a live feed of a Motherwell game that I'm not at, you know, I don't mind listening to somebody talking about a rubbish for 2 minutes, then somebody shouting over the top of them, there's been a goal somewhere, and you know, you're forgetting who's commentating, or who's the guy that's shouting at your game. So you think, oh no, was that Willie Miller, or was that somebody else? That's the only thing I really tend to enjoy. But the Scotsport, you know, since really that Scotsport programme, it's, you know, it sounds weird to say, but it's gone right downhill for there. Again, like Peter says, I don't tend to watch much of the highlights either, especially now with, you know, the YouTube channels, you know, having fairly extensive highlights themselves. I mean, going back to, again, that, what, 11 seconds we had last week on, you know, national telly, there's 8 minutes here up on the YouTube channel, so I forgot what it's called there, sorry. And not saying that as well, though, there was a year or an hour of it on Alba the night before, but again, for what you told me, it didn't deserve an hour anyway. But it's going back to the penalties, and no, sorry, the yellow cards there for McManus and that as well. The first one, again, I've only really seen it in real time, and then on the sort of the YouTube highlights, again, full speed, there was no sort of replay. I can't tell how high or how, you know, how much of his studs were showing. To me, it really just looked like a hard, fast tackle. It, you know, it wasn't from behind, it wasn't for the side as far as I could see. The boy who, you know, got tackled, he stayed down a wee bit to win a free kick, and then he got up and he was fine. It just looked like a hard, fast tackle to me. Maybe I'm wrong, fair dues. The second one was atrocious, I thought, to be honest with you. It's as if the two of them were just jostling shoulder to shoulder for the ball. I mean, McManus has put his shoulder in front of the other guys, and the other guys just went down. Again, I've only seen it sort of on the highlights because, like Peter, I had went downstairs because I'd heard there was a pint ready for me. So, and I missed it live at the game. I only seen that sort of, you know, full speed play there. There was no replay again on the YouTube highlights. So it looked really soft to me, and everybody who I've read comment on it and things like that seems to be the same opinion. So I'm not sure about, obviously, whether or no sports scene or anything like that would have showed them a different speed, you know, maybe a replay for another angle or things like that. But I would sincerely doubt it.
Because there's not a great deal, obviously, with no game to preview for next Saturday. One thing I wanted to bring up, and I know it's, you know, I'm not going to get too into it because it's something we kind of talk about on a regular basis, but it's something worth pointing out because there's a big thread on Steelmen Online that's raging away, the Well Society or not thread. And because, you know, with Sparta not being here and that kind of thing, I thought, you know, we've got a few different opinions than we normally get. So I just wanted to throw it open and see what the kind of thoughts were. Not so much on, you know, what we've done to death, maybe, you know, the flaws with the Well Society, at least I think I probably have, you know, what we see is wrong with it. But I mean, what does the future hold for the Well Society? I mean, Peter, we'll come to you first. I mean, how, I know they're talking about, you know, needing X amount of members, 2,000 members by 2020. I read earlier that they were suggesting that they've recruited 40 odd members this month. I mean, what does the future hold for the Well Society? Is it going to succeed, or are we going to be in a situation in 2020 where the future's rather uncertain?
Well, I think the figures that were last mentioned as to how many members there were and the recent uptake, they can't be too far away from around 1,700, which is probably about half, you know, the amount of season ticket holders that we have. So I think to get up to the 2,000 that Les Hutchison wants, it's not a massive leap. I think it can be done. I mean, obviously, it's not perfect, but very few things are. And I think I've said this even last season, The greatest threat to Motherwell Football Club is not poor performances on the pitch or angry fans. The greatest danger to Motherwell Football Club is apathy, and that's what will kill it. And I think if people, we're very much got, you know, wanting, you know, we've got to get something for it. We kind of just joined the Mail Society. Yeah, but we used to get a DVD, or I want this and I want that. You know, having a say, a genuine say in your club's future, you know, is a great thing, and keeping it away from the hands of owners like the boy Chilino down at Leeds and the various other nutcases like your Vladimir Romanovs and all these people have come in and, you know, torn asunder, you know, decades of history and put the very club, you know, the very existence of the club in under real threat. And I think, yeah, we're not, as I say, we don't do everything right. You know, we get a lot of things wrong, but everyone at Motherwell, their heart's in the right place. And I think if the fans can back it, you know, there'll be enough money there to keep the club sustainable. You know, and I think obviously that we could do a little bit more in terms of maybe business involvement, putting in a little bit more money. I think we can do more by getting some more businesses. But I know that Keith Campbell's there, and the Gavin and Craig are working hard as well in the Welsh Society. And you know, they're doing probably need 5 or 6 people there doing that, but there's not enough money there. So I think hopefully there's an understanding that these guys are doing their level best, and if the fans can back it, I know it's not, and not everyone can afford it, and I think that's why they brought the fee down to make it affordable, which shows that they're listening, because there's been problems in the past with the communication and fans have pointed that out. So they made it at least, what is it, I think, a fiver a month rather than a tenner a month, so that they're listening, they're making it as affordable as they can for everybody. And I think personally it's the way to go. You might say I'm bound to say that because obviously I'm, you know, on a part-time basis employed by the club, but I really do think it can work. And if we can overcome typical Motherwell fan apathy, I really think it will work.
But in saying that, I mean, in terms of the apathy, I remember being at the first couple of the sign-in evening, the sign-up evenings and engaging in a lot of the conversation on Steelmen Online. I mean, at the very start, it didn't really seem to me, at least, as though apathy was going to be an issue. And if anything, it almost feels as though the apathy is what has been created by the Welsh Society rather than it just being typical Motherwell fans. Okay, there will be a degree of that. But I mean, I think that's my concern going forward. I don't want to spend the whole time being negative or anything like that. But you know, looking specifically to the future, that needs to be changed. Whether the apathy is caused by the Welsh Society, whether it is typical Motherwell fans, simply kind of doing the whole build it and they will come mentality that we've done pretty much since the very start. That to me isn't just about Motherwell fans being apathetic. It's not even about football fans being apathetic. The idea that you would want something for your money is the way society is. Whether that's, you know, a good thing, a bad thing, you know, that just is the way society is. And I think that's my worry, that it's not going to reach its target because there seems to be a complete reluctance to understand that. Even with this, you know, virtual pitch, you know, you get a virtual piece of the pitch. That is nothing. That is literally nothing. And you're kind of highlighting the fact that you're giving someone nothing by giving them nothing. And I think it's that kind of, that's where my worries creep in a little bit. I have said all along that I want the Welsh Society to succeed. But I think the apathy that you're talking about from Motherwell fans, I think that's because there seems to be apathy within the Welsh Society. You know, that's the way it kind of comes across. And until they kind of realise that it isn't just about join the Welsh Society and people will queue up, people do need things. Otherwise, they're not going to.
For me, I think when Peter said there that the hope is that we will eventually become self-sufficient, there's one of the big barriers for me joining the Welsh Society, I'm not actually a member yet, one of the big barriers for me joining is the lack of evidence to that. Because, I mean, when the Welsh Society first started, there was sort of the alarm bells about how we'd been budgeting for top six finishes, budgeting for even top six finishes in a cup run, and how we would need to cut our cloth and things. And that came into play a bit last summer when McCall lost a couple of key players, and he was only really able to bring in a couple of players who weren't of the same calibre. And I thought that was sort of the beginning of it. But then since Les Hutchison came in at the tail end of last year, he's proved to be nothing but a hoarder. I mean, in January last year, when we signed 7 or 8 players, I thought it might have been a necessity, and probably, yeah, it did turn out to be a necessity, because I don't think the players we had prior to January would have kept us in the division the way the team was going and performances were going last season. So I kind of let that go by the by. I thought maybe he's come in and he's seen that immediately we need to stay in the Scottish Premier League, and he needs 6 or 7 players to do that, otherwise his investment's down. And then I thought that's fair enough. Then we sort of cleared the deadwood in the summer, and now he seems to have just cleared the deadwood and allowed Ian Barakoff to replace the deadwood with new deadwood. I mean, I find it utterly astonishing that Mark McGee's come in and he says that it might take him 15 games to find his best team, to find his rhythm. I don't disagree with Mark McGee saying that. I just find it astonishing that a Motherwell manager, in times where we're supposed to be cutting our cloth, living within our means, becoming self-sufficient, has a plethora of players who needs to work out who's good and who's not. Most Motherwell managers would expect to come in and play the 11 players that were fit. I just can't grasp how we're going to become self-sufficient when we've got 6 first-team strikers. And to add to that, I'm also concerned about, as you say, Jay, you want to have, it's something for your investment. That's just the way society is. You don't want to just pay money for nothing. For me, I find it a bit sort of concerning that I don't think that if I was a Welsh Society member, I would have, and if the Welsh Society succeeds and owns a club as well, I'm not entirely convinced that I would have a whole lot more to say in the club than what I do just now. To add to that, I mean, I think like it's for me, a lot of the sort of Welsh Society and the bickering about it and the apathy and the sort of, is it going to succeed, is it not going to succeed, all the sort of uncertainty and chat, for me, it's part of it's reminded me that I don't think I really want to own a football club. I think I just want to support one. But the bottom line is if it's the future of our clubs at stake, then I'm sure I will join. And if it's a case between not having a team to support and having a team to support, then I'm fairly certain I'll be a member. But until that point, I mean, I just remain entirely unconvinced of it all. I probably do fall into the apathetic category.
Buster, just to pick up on a point Joe made there, I think that the idea that even if you are a Welsh Society member, you might not actually get that much of a say. This is something I've spoke to a few of you about before. The idea that I think at the very start it was sold, that the idea that you would get quite a big say. I'm not quite like that myfootballclub.com idea, but that you would have, you know, an input in some way. I remember there being conversations on Steelmen Online about how they're going to do this. Is there going to be, you know, like balloting? Is there going to be a forum? I mean, how are you going to have your say? And then, of course, that was reinforced with the vote on Rangers, you know, whether they come into the SPL or down to the third division. And yet, I kind of tend to agree with Joe. I think that we are, as things go along and as, I don't know, as maybe people get a bit too bogged down in the constitution and the whole, you know, ins and outs of the whole thing, you know, are we not at risk that you're just going to end up with a kind of a, you know, a mini politics idea where you're voting for someone that you don't really know a lot about, that, you know, you've never met before, who is then going to have a say on your behalf rather than having any say yourself?
I was going to jump in at one point here when Joe was talking. Just at the point you brought it back to be honest with you, the sort of, you know, have your say thing. Like Joe sort of said it as well, he'll join if he feels the need to. That's really why I joined, because I thought there's, you know, let's give them a bit of support, let's see what happens. I'm not really too fussed on the ins and outs of it at the moment. But the one thing I do notice is that people are talking about the, you know, have your say things. Maybe all a bit of hearsay, but you know, the people are basically suggesting they were given the vote on, you know, what should the club vote, in regards to Rangers. Other than that, they don't really seem to have a say in anything that happens with the Welsh society. There's talk of the, you know, the constitution or whatever it is have been changed a few times, maybe for the better, who knows, but you know, no one, none of the members seem to have been consulted about this, or you know, even given a say if that's what they want. But I think again, that's maybe one of the problems with the sort of society idea, that everybody thinks they have a solution, and unfortunately, you know, there's going to be a certain amount of people who think they're right, whether or not things are going in the right direction.
Another thing I would say is that it's improved this season. Quite a couple of games I've went into the East Stand and I've been handed a Join the Welsh Society leaflet, a bit of information on it and things as I've walked into the game. But do you know, I was thinking to myself at one point, I know the Welsh Society through reading things like Steelman Online, reading the Welsh Society's Twitter, reading Motherwell's official website, etc. And I would think to my, I thought back to myself, I was at all every home game bar two last season, and I can't ever remember having coming away from the game thinking, oh, that was good information we received about the Welsh Society today, or the at half time they talked about the Welsh Society. The only time I can ever really remember is sort of promoting it, or it being particularly like sort of in your face, as it should be, was when Les Hutchison came onto the pitch at half time against Ross County and John Boyle got his photo taken with him. That was, to me, I just think that they're now at a stage where over the past sort of 3-4 months this season, they're trying to put in 3-4 years work where there was little to no promotion. And it just, I'm not to invest my money, and I know you say invest my money, I could do it £5 a month, which wouldn't be that big a difference to my life. But like any investment, you kind of have to be sort of sure of what you're investing into, and I would need to see more progress from the society, and for me, just more signs that it's a well-organised organisation. And I just, to this point in time, there's been nowhere near enough evidence for that to make me commit.
Well, just before we move on to the Remember Well question, I'll just bring Peter back in the Welsh Society, because he was a bit more positive about it, and he might, you know, finish us off a little bit in a more positive frame of mind.
Well, listen, I mean, the great thing is, if people are at least expressing opinion, whether like you're certainly three of you, I suppose, you know, you've got doubts, the fact that you're expressing that, I mean, you're not a closed book to kind of considering that. I mean, Joe's made a number of good points here about the lack of communication and being in the Motherwell public space, and that's right. And I think, in fairness, that's what they have been trying to do. There was a realization that, you know, there wasn't enough of that being done, and I think that is the fact that they're doing that now. It's bringing results, and I think that if they keep doing that, the results will keep getting better. I realise, you know, what you're saying is absolutely right, that it's an investment that's to be made, and you want to see something for that. I suppose the counter argument would be, whether we're signing Neymar or whether we're signing Ian Black, people still buy their season tickets. Whether Maurice Malpass is in the dugout or is Jose Mourinho. And obviously you've got a very different product with two of them options.
Probably not currently, the way Mourinho is going.
Possibly, yeah. Possibly wasn't a marvellous example. But you know the point I'm making, that fans are loyal, and it's the loyalty of fans that make people buy the season ticket, even though last season was terrible. Buy the new top, even though you preferred the one 3 years ago, but you want to have it anyway because you're going on your holidays in the weekend. You'll do it because you're a fan and because it's in the blood and you're loyal, and you'll do it. And obviously that shouldn't be the only reason for joining the Welsh Society. I think it's going to be a big one. I have to, I suppose, commend them for not pulling at the heartstrings and giving it the pay your fiver a month if the club's going to die. You know, because it would be very, very easy to use that emotional pull. But I think, hopefully, the communication and the information that's coming out is improving. And I think having the guys there working on it all the time is helping. and it will hopefully convince people. And all I would advise anyone, be it yourselves or anybody listening, if you have any questions or any doubts about the Welsh Society, go and speak to them. Go and speak to the guys that are there. Get your questions answered. You might find it, they do convince you. That's all I would say.
Well, on that, we'll just move on to the Remember Well question for this week. It kind of just stemmed from a wee conversation on Facebook just about obscure goalkeepers. So the idea was just to put it out there and see who could come up with pretty much the most obscure goalkeeper that we've had at Firth Park. 9 times out of 10, they tend to be the kind of guys who maybe make the odd sub-appearance, and that's about it. Johnny Warnock went with Artur Kryziak, Jerry McDermott, uh-huh. Howard Samaroff. Craig Holmes went with Scott Thompson. He says, I think he played one game for us circa 1996.
He's right. He didn't get the year right. Here's Stato coming in here. The last game of the season, 97-98 against Aberdeen, we get beat 2-1, and his first act was to pick the ball out of net after a first minute penalty. There you go.
There you go. David Innes says Kevin McKeown. Graham Faulkner said Kevin McKeown as well. Andre Allen. We've got another shout for Howard Samaroff from Ian Steelman Online, Maestro Buchanan. He also went with the wee guy who gets sacked from the wee guy who gets sacked from Albion Rovers for stealing Fitbas, John Connolly, was it? I remember John Connolly, yes. But I don't remember the story about him nicking Fitbas.
No, that's lost to me, that one.
Ah, well. Ross Mitchell, Gary Gow, Andy Howie went with Steve Kirk because he even saved a penalty versus Hearts.
Yes.
I think for me, and I'll be honest, one of you, I mean, between yourself, Pierre, and the almanac, Joe McKelvey, Sebastian Kozorowski, I'm not even going to pronounce it.
Kozorowski.
Yeah.
Kozorowski.
Who is this
sub
guy?
Under Jim Gannon. He was a sub under Jim Gannon. He never quite made an appearance.
Right.
It was a week where Jim Gannon really didn't like Michael Fraser. Kozorowski got to sit on the bench.
Because that's an interesting one. That came in for Dave Scott, and he said, the guy's name that I'm going to try and pronounce again, round about 08-09-ish, I'm not sure he ever did go off the bench. And Craig Holmes replied saying, that's quite clearly a made-up name, no cheating, please. And I tended to agree with that, but he actually came back and he said Gannon often opted for him on the bench over Michael Fraser. So for me, I think that's probably, although that's possibly one of the most recent, I think that's probably the most obscure one for me. But what about you guys? What ones can you think of, if any, that weren't on that list?
One of the first names that came to my mind was a guy, again, who I don't recall him making a first-team appearance. We haven't actually had that many obscure goalkeepers, but I do remember him, a keeper with quite a comical name in Philip Bannister, and I can remember him being quite good in This Is Football in the PS1.
Fair enough, aye.
Well, I'll Phil Bannister was I'll come back with a couple of names, but I think on that one, I remember back that was 98-99. Myself and the bold Matt Johnson went along to train with the team one day because we'd interviewed Billy Davis and Jim Griffin for One Step Beyond, and at the end I put a penalty by Phil Bannister, so maybe that explains why I didn't get a game in the first team. I'm going to offer a couple of names. One, a guy who was sub goalie to Ali Maxwell. Back in the days before sub goal, you had a sub, but he only made one appearance, and it was off the bench in John Gagan's testimonial, and his boy's name was Chris Ainsley. Another one was a trialist who was the brother of the boy who played for Chelsea, Celestine Babayaro. His brother had a trial mother, Emmanuel Babayaro. Sadly, we never signed him. I think that would have been marvellous, wouldn't it?
What about yourself, Bust, anybody?
Not really, to be honest with you. The Kozorowski one, or whatever his name was, sorry. When I seen his name, it brought back memories of me seeing his name, but again, I'd never seen him play, obviously because we then found out he hadn't played. But again, other than that, you know, you're going back to young guys who never really got a chance, sat on the bench, or, you know, made one appearance on the bench before dropping out, or you know, maybe thinking they were going bigger places. Alan Martin, I think that was his name, went to Leeds United.
Sure. Yeah.
16 or something, left us to go to bigger and better places. And I think he's playing his trade somewhere in you know, Division 3 or something now. But
no, he's Aki's sub keeper now. He signed with Aki.
Oh, you're right. Sorry, you're right. Aye, that's right. I remember actually.
Yeah, so he really has hit rock bottom. That's a shame.
Well, true. I'd rather play in the third division, I think. Aye. No, but other than that, no, there's nobody there who are, you know, I can't add him to basically. The most obscure goalkeeper on my Facebook, I think, is Frankie Dubordeaux, but everybody remembers him, and he loves jumping out of planes now, so.
Did Barry John Corr play any games?
He did play quite a few games.
He was just a name that popped to mind, but must be getting old. That's what it is. The memory's gone. Well, on that note, just when we couldn't get any more jovial, I found the Graham Spears Plays the Piano YouTube video. So hopefully if I can rip that successfully, that'll play us out at the end. If not, it'll just be some random indie tune as usual. But we'll call things to a close. Buster, thanks as always. Peter and Joe, thanks very much. Particularly Joe for filling in last minute because Farah's stuck on a train. But thanks very much, lads.
Pleasure. Thanks
for having us.
Hello, thank you.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next week, assuming Sparrow's train gets up the road in time. Until then, cheerio.